Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. Well, here's some scratchy notes. Here's some scratchy notes written on 8x11 yellow pages. In actual ink, I-N-K, remember what ink was? Handwritten in ink with a fountain pen. And I don't know when I wrote these were notes for a projected couple of chapters for the story. Who knows if they'll wind up in the movie or I'll ever publish it. Year 1959, scene one, the oxygen tent. Doctor to adolescent boy as his father lays dying, hovering between life and death. Doctor says it's like having a blowout on the highway. We put a patch on the hole in the tube, but we don't know how long it will hold. Well, shall I go on? You want to hear a little bit more about reality, which we've all faced? Do you want to know this stuff? Two, the hotel bar earlier that night. Now, I don't think I'm going to read this to you. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. Maybe I don't. Let's see the next one. Later that night, three. No, not going to read that. No, can't read that. Oh. Here's one. Here's one I will read to you because it's a very important part of the story that the final bust of Dante, the artist, must see. The brother who never was. On the dresser sits a few family photos. In the center, on its own doily, is a faded, blurred picture of a boy in a high chair. He wears extra thick eyeglasses and his head is askew, hanging almost like a doll whose neck had been snapped by a too playful child. Shall we go on? Would you like to hear a little more of the background to this particular story? Because there's a lot more. These are just little teeny snapshots of the movie, individual scenes in the movie. 1963, quote, why must you do everything wrong? You're not graduating. 1970, why must you do everything backwards? Said his father. 1969, binga banga banga, I just want to leave a tanga. This is like all sorts of interesting stuff in here. Some of it's funny. Some of it. Let us see what we have here. This is interesting. This is interesting stuff. Oh, boy. Yeah, I think I'll read this. People who grew up with me, mostly my original birth family in New York, who I don't speak to, think I'm a bent mic. The children of socialists who fled the Tsar's tyranny, they do not yet see the growing government tyranny I define daily as Northern California's loudest mouth. This is when I was still a local host. They all live within a few miles of the docks where their grandparents landed as hungry immigrants. I fled their oppression when I was young to hunt for medicinal plants in the Fiji Islands, to earn two master's degrees in Hawaii, to study epidemiology at Berkeley and earned my PhD, to explore my own boundaries, almost die nine times, if not more, and come back. To come back from the vile left-wing hatred of affirmative action, which kept this immigrant son from his future in order to appease the psychotic gangsters. To deny to me scholarships, professorships, jobs, dignity, self-respect based on race, sex, perversion, disability, all out of Hitler Germany's nation. So I woke up. shook off 36 years of liberal brainwashing, left my sheeple go, and became me. Left my sheeple go, and became me. Left my sheeple go. Michael Savage, number one on the radio, every day, Monday to Friday, drive time afternoons. A rocking conservative in the heart of occupied San Francisco, and winning. Winning against opposition and death threats and hatred, the love and respect of hundreds of thousands every day. That's why I left my sheeple go. How I went from being a leftist social worker, part-time poet on New York's Upper West Side in the early 60s to right-wing radio roiler in the late 90s. That's my story. How I bent my inner mic from left to right to fly straight is the lesson I want to give you. To help save us from the inevitable social collapse we are being driven to by the left-wing fanatics who dominate the media, including TV news, movies, all major papers and magazines, teachers' unions, etc. I often say, and I'm always surprised to see, that ultra-left-wing liberalism is a mental disorder. Wow, when did I write this? Wow. What year was this? Became a book later. The fools who push Marxism, income redistribution, people's rights, and so on, the tenured Leninists, the billionaire senators like Dianne Feinstein, who champion the poor while soaking the middle and consorting with the red Chinese military, the mentally deranged Charles Schumer, who foam against guns, not knowing it was guns that gave the few Jews who survived Poland's the trigger of freedom. The illiberal Jews of America who hate America for a living with their ACLU laws and judges in soiled robes. The grandchildren of those who fled tyranny, now a tyranny of themselves. To correct the drift of the U.S. Titanic towards the icebergs of insanity. To break the mad grip of foaming leaders taking us on this course of death. To grab the wheel and steer us clear of the psychotic corruption of false leadership, left and right, that drunkenly steers on. To awaken the sheeple. To have the middle class, where virtue, talent, learning, and religion remains, rise up against the disobedient, the corrupt, the degenerate, the violent, and build a new America. The good and honest people in the middle like you must revolt against the two extremes of our nation, the corrupt and the violent. Unbend your stuck tillers and steer clear of the coming iceberg. That's my warning. Now here's my story. I'm still a social worker, helping the countless Eddies, as I call them, face the bestial in their children's schools, the hysterical screaming from their leather parades, the lying politicians, the deceitful newspapers. Forgive us for the sin which we have committed before you with an utterance of the lips, for the sin which we have committed before you with knowledge and with deceit, for the sin which we have committed by a gathering of lewdness, by using coercion, by false denial and lying, by a bribe-taking or a bribe-giving hand, by scoffing. Forgive us, God, for the sin which we have committed before you in business dealings, for the sin which we have committed before you by a haughty demeanor, with proud looks, with impudence, by scheming against the fellow man, by frivolity, by obduracy, by tale-bearing, by causeless hatred, by embezzlement. Forgive us, God, and for the sin which we have committed before you by a confused heart. Let me reintroduce you to these words. When have you last read or heard these words? What might our world become should people again fear God and judgment and toe the lines above? What might our world become should people again fear God and judgment and toe the lines above? Would we need to narcotize our boys with Ritalin and Prozac? Might the school shooting cease while our Second Amendment holds? Are these moral judgments too much to bear? Condoms in our schools, handed out by beefy lezos, comfy in concentration camp pictures, not as victims but as sadistic guards. But prayer prohibited? Is this not insanity? A society turned upside down? Where secular Jews define their religion in their own terms? Judaism as scholarship? Judaism as social activism? Judaism as liberalism? Judaism as anything but what it is, a religion with moral laws, not Dershowitzian, shekel-driven, twisted justice, but God's eternal laws, God's eternal judgment, where debased women proudly claim The same Eddies whose fathers and grandfathers defeated Hitler's supermen, now silenced, cowed by Clinton's white male-hating laws and lawyers. A legion of male-hating women dispensing injustice under the dipsomaniac maniac from Miami, Janet Reno. First for false child abuse manhunts, then false race hate crimes, anything but the truth from Big Chin Reno. The corrupt in power fueling the violent like, well, I'm naming names here which I won't name, to keep them off their backs so they can do deals with devils, selling security secrets, busting out whole currencies, Treasury Secretary, ex-money trader Robert Rubin, peddling respect for human organ pirates in China so hubby can prosper, supporting the Muslim invasion of Europe. Have you no shame, Madeleine Albright? Bomb, 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 she said. Berger said, trade, 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 he said. The children and grandchildren who fled tyranny, now corrupt tyrants themselves. And you wonder why young boys put on earrings and dresses, why young girls take on the rights of all peoples but their own, why mom is on Prozac and dad is on Viagra. But the market is up. 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 My mother's religion was righteousness, a truth and justice searching news media, now little more than college newspapers with Leninist, gay, and lesbian agendas. Rarely a picture of a bad guy if he's of color, always when he's white. The first pandemic in history to never mention causality. I've written 18 books, collected hundreds of rare rainforest plants. Not but one or two lines in the New York Times to call me homophobic or suggesting contact tracing of HIV carriers in 1986. But let a violent minority burn a store and his plight is news to the new Schulzberger. All the news that fits, we print, said Mad Magazine. All the news not fit for print, said Mad Magazine. Want to call this book a confessional? Wrong. It is not a confessional. It is not a confessional at all. I'll be right back. This is the Savage Nation.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Today was a day I didn't want to get out of bed. I don't know why it was. Everything went wrong. Normally, garbage day here is Tuesday. For some reason, I woke up and I heard the lousy, stinking, rotten, out-of-date, 100-year-old garbage trucks making so much noise. I wanted to get an RPG and put them out of their misery. How can we put up with garbage trucks that are 100 years old that pollute and make noise? You'd think by now they have quiet, you know, like garbage trucks. Something doesn't wake the neighborhood up at 3 in the morning. Rattle, clank, bang, fume, stink. So I said, oh, my God. Went back to sleep, woke up at 9, and I said, oh, I missed garbage day. So I go in the street, and I said, no garbage truck. I roll the can down, even though there was, like, nothing in the can. I didn't even look in it. I call the garbage company. They're nice enough to say, yeah, what's your address? Okay, we'll send a special pickup. They sent a pickup. There was nothing in the can. It was one of those days. I don't even know what day it was. I'm under such pressure from the show. So anyway, I told you I missed the vacation. I didn't want to go. Now, here's what happened. I want to show you how good my instincts are. I'm not perfect, but I'm as close to as perfect a human being as God has ever made in some regards and a total wreck in other regards. In other words, I'm just like you. But in the areas that I'm good, I am great. In the areas I'm bad, I'm average. So here I go. I said, okay, my intuition was don't go to Florida, right? I was supposed to go Tuesday and be there all week. Number one, and I knew it was, I looked at the weather report, and the heaviest rain in 50 years in Florida, where I was supposed to be. Now, could you imagine sitting in a hotel room on a vacation and looking at the rain? It's not bad if you live there. I happen to love tropical storms if you're in the tropics. When I lived in the islands, there was no more beautiful day for me than a hurricane. Hurricane-like, not, I don't mean like knocking over houses level, But I mean, a beautiful storm is very exciting. I'm glad I'm not there now. So then I say to Mrs. S, tell me something. What was the flight like? She knew it was a leading. I gave her a softball because she knew what I wanted to hear, like I did the right thing by not going. So she said, tell me the flight. Just tell me the, I want to hear the whole flight from beginning to end. She's, oh, she's, let me put it this way. Nothing, she's much tougher than me. She'll outlive me by at least 50 years, maybe 100 with the new technology. She could at least 100, maybe 50 years more, minimum. It doesn't bother her the same way. She knows how to handle things better than me. She, like, had a lot of bad things happen young. So she's tough, tough as nails. And so that's why she can, you know, handle tough things. So she's, okay, you wouldn't have liked the flight. I said, what do you mean I wouldn't have liked the flight? I said, I hate flying. She said, yeah, I know you hate flying, but this was particularly bad. I said, why? Explain to me what happened. She says, well, you know. I said, no, give me the whole detail. I said, all right, here's the whole detail. She gives me on the phone this morning. She says, well, first of all, the seat you were supposed to be in was empty. So they upgraded somebody, and he was 400 pounds in a Santa Claus suit. I said, you're making this up. She said, no. She said he was 400 pounds, and he was wearing a bright red Santa suit with a hat going to his relatives in Florida. And he wanted to talk to me for 5.5 hours. I said, oh. I said, tell me about your seatmates in front of you in row 4. She said, no, you don't want to know. I said, yes, I want to know. She said they were upgraded from coach. They were 2 liberals from Noe Valley in San Francisco. I said, how did you know? She's, well, he had a gray ponytail. She was dressed like a throwback. And they spoke as loudly as they could on every liberal topic known to mankind. I said, well, what gives you an idea they were liberals? She's, well, if that's not enough for you. She said their son was still back in coach, and he kept visiting and leaning over their chair, and he was wearing a T-shirt which said, Bush sucks. How can we have billions for war and none for the starving masses kind of T-shirt? I said, oh, what a wonderful flight. So let's say you had Santa on your right, and you had 2 people from hell in front of you with a visiting jerk from the rear. She said, yes. So I said, you know what? You've just given me good show prep. Look, you're on an airplane. Nobody wants to be there. Everybody would rather not be there. Suddenly, you are subjected to their politics, and they're talking too loud. How do you handle that situation?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I had a nutty friend, a real SOB, a piece of garbage. He was a miserable rat, even as a kid, a miserable rat, because he had a crazy mother who was on Benzedrine to lose weight. She went to some crazy doctor in Jersey who put her on speed. She'd come back nuts. I mean, crazy. And she'd drive the pink Cadillac. They had a little more money than everyone else. The father was hardworking. She was a nothing. Always on Benzedrine, and a wacko. She was so crazy that she would take a dog chain. She once did this and beat herself across the wrists, and they were bleeding. So when the husband came home at night, like from working all day from some delivery route that he owned, he had a franchise, whatever, she came screaming. She said, Joe, Joe, look what your son did to me. Look what he did to me. And the father would go upstairs, and he had a fist fight with the son because the crazy mother said that the son did this to her wrist when she did it herself. Can you believe this kind of situation? So I have no compassion for him. He was a rat before that, and he's still a rat. He's still a no-goodnik. But he was a good friend of mine when I was in the 5th grade, because who knows? You don't know people. And since I was sort of a mischievous child, naturally I sought out the more mischievous of the students, those who fidgeted the most, had the brightest eyes, and never listened to the teacher. They were my kind of people. Today already they put us into Ritalin therapy and turn us into robots. I wouldn't be on the radio today. I'd be like an accountant somewhere in a prison. I'd be counting underwear for a prison somewhere to make sure that the underwear didn't get stolen. But the long and short was, yeah, the crazy mother. That doesn't excuse him for being nuts. As years went on, one of the kids in the neighborhood became a very famous, two of them became famous rock and roll singers, 2 out of Queens. I won't mention their names. One had a big hit at 11 or 13 years old. He was always more mature than us. He had, like, women. You know, like guys at 13, like the guys with a pompadour and he had like a girlfriend 19. I never understood that. We were still like dreaming. This guy had like a woman. You know, she was 20. I don't know how they got that. Like through the music business, they probably gave him a. So he went and did a tour, this musician, in Japan at 14, dropped out of high school. He had one song. It was a huge hit, like 145. I don't remember. It wasn't Run Around Sue, but it was in that genre. So he goes to Japan, a big tour. The Japanese always liked American rock and rollers. Now he comes back. Now it's years later. Now he's on his behind. And he's got nothing. So he becomes a U.S. postman. I swear to God, years later, the same rock and roller who had the Jaguar before anyone could even drive, the blue Jaguar, the cuff that stood out of the jacket, the pompadour, became a postman. There's nothing wrong with being a postman, but, you know, you start out as a rock and roller and you end up as a postman. That's a pretty hard row, you know what I'm saying? It's better to start out as a postman and end up as a rock and roll star, let me tell you. What'd you say I was going to talk about before I told that story? He had a blue Jaguar, an XK140 MC drophead coupe. To this day, I want that car. I have a Ferrari. I still want that 56 XK140 drophead coupe. So that bad kid, going back now to the bad kid whose mother beat herself on the arm. So we like to go around all over New York by subway, and we were like 12, 13. We went everywhere. 12, 13, 14, Manhattan, Hubert's Flea Circus. Down in the bowels of the basement of the subways, there were guys selling, like, they weren't porno magazines. They were soft core. And the old, you see the old geezers there lining up looking at the magazines. We try to, like, you look at them, hey, kid, get out of here. Get out of here, kid. Get out of here. You know, that kind of thing. So we used to like to go to Coney Island, and they had exhibits. I don't know how to describe it. They were like mannequins of wax figures. And there were some of them were scary as heck. Well, one of them was of George Metetsky, the mad bomber of the subway. And it was so lifelike. Like, if you were a kid 12 and you had just been on a New York subway car in the heat for an hour and you went out to Coney Island and you stood outside one of those exhibits and you looked in, they showed him like in a jail cell. The guy looked like he was going to come out of the cell and strangle you. Well, adjacent to that mad bomber display, there was another guy. This scared me to this day. I have nightmares about him. It showed a guy, I don't know what he did, dismembered girls or women. I don't remember what he did. He was really bad, this one. And he looked like ordinary Joe, white guy, ordinary guy. And they found him. I remember it was like a mad thing in New York. They didn't know what to do. Girls were being found dismembered. Finally, they tracked this nut down to a chicken farm in New Jersey. I don't remember his name. And he's got like a corpse in a trunk under the bed. I mean, the whole thing, man. So this exhibit in Coney Island of the wax figure shows this guy reconstructed in wax in a little room in the back of a chicken farm with a dismembered girl's body in a trunk, and he's got like blood on his feet with like a blank stare at you, and they show you like the feet and the hands and the blood. It was stuff that today they could never ever show you, but life was richer as a result. For example, they had freak shows in those days. A genuine freak show is not so bad. The freak had a job. If I went to Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey, I didn't go for the horse. Oh, the elephant. I went for the freak show in the back. The one-breasted man, the half-bearded woman, the microcephalic. In other words, the people who today became politicians, in my day, they were in the back room of Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey without a Windsor nut. Or in another display, the same people today you might find on CNN or ABC or CBS, you know, after some surgery, they were in the freak show too. You know, half man, half woman, half human, half amoeba. And it was wonderful. I like the whole thing. You eat the popcorn. You walk around. You gape at the freak. You thank God that you're not like them. But the truth of the matter is, you say, well, it's exploited with the freak. No, if you ask freaks, I mean, a lot of them call them that today. You ask somebody, a freak of nature like that, they liked being in a freak show. They made a good living. They were around other abnormal people. They had a little, you know, world, a social world. They had sex, some of them, with each other. They socialize. Today, what? They sit at home watching television on welfare? You think that's better for a freak? No. So there's something to be said for going back to the America of the 1950s.
Savage.
Knoxville, Tennessee. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
I listen to your show all the time, and I hear you talk a lot about the media and how it's become so biased and they only play the stories that benefit them. Yet when I listen to your show, I hear most of your callers are just singing your praises, and they don't really give you anything to debate about.
Yeah, why don't you give me something to debate about?
I'm sorry?
Why don't you give me something to debate about?
Well, I mean, I'm very liberal, so most of your views...
Also, give me something we can debate. Go ahead. You called. You want to debate. Let's debate.
Okay. First thing that I've been listening to that you've been saying is how you feel that the third world cultures shouldn't be brought into America, that we've brought ourselves to higher standards than that. And
so you think third world standards should be introduced to America and we should, what, give up internal plumbing?
No, is that you do, however, seem to think that we should start torturing.
Now you're changing. You want to talk about interrogating people who would cut your throat, or you want to talk about eliminating the flush toilet? Which one do you want to talk about?
No. What I'm saying is those are the cultures and those are the standards that they hold themselves to. So why would we hold ourselves to the standards of...
Well, you see what you're doing? This is classic liberalism, where you use twisted logic and come up with a faulty conclusion. You are in a war, just as I am in a war, with Islamic fascists who would like to kill you and or convert you. Do you accept that or not?
I accept that there are extremists in the Muslim community that would like...
All right. All right, they would like that. And they have no rules with regard to how they treat us. Is that correct? And they're also much tougher. They're much tougher and battle-hardened and more fanatic than anyone you could ever imagine. They feel virtual no pain. They're like supermen. Now, how would you get information from them? What techniques would you use?
Well, I'm not saying that I've got the answers to that, but I think that...
Well, you do. You have the answer, which is don't use any astringent techniques. You have an answer. You don't have it. This is such a typical Democrat call. You have no answer, but you know that what the Republicans want to do or the conservatives want to do is wrong. That's classically Pelosi logic.
And this is why you don't take Democratic calls. And
I just took one. I just took a Democrat call, and you didn't come up with a conclusion, a solution, a proposal, nothing. All you said was your idea of torturing the bad guys is wrong. So I asked you, how would you extract information? You said, I don't know.
Okay. The other point.
Now, let's deal with the next problem. Let's deal with immigration. You like illegal immigrants in America?
Not illegal, no, but I don't think we should close the borders by any means.
And so how would you stop the tide, the millions and millions and millions of illegal aliens coming in from Mexico? How would you stop it?
Well, how do you figure that closing the borders is going to help our country?
Well, you're changing the discussion. We both agreed that we are wanting to stop the flood of illegal aliens into America. Didn't we agree on that?
Yes, illegal, but I don't want to close the borders down. Yes, that's where you go to that extreme. You say don't let anyone...
How would you stop the illegals from coming into America? How would you do it?
How would you...
Well, no, you're not answering me. You just said you want to stop the illegal aliens. I'm asking you how you would do it. How would you do it?
Okay, obviously every system is flawed, and there are other ways than just closing down the...
Give me one other way to stop the flood of illegals who have no fear of our laws, because the laws are so weak and so watered down. They also know that they'd rather put that in the American judicial system and the American Justice Department and the Democrats and the Republicans would rather put our Border Patrol agents behind bars than illegal aliens or drug dealers. So how would you stop them?
Okay. The problem with this whole conversation is you're going to such an extreme by closing the entire border and not thinking of any other solutions yourself.
What do you mean by closing the entire border? I didn't say close the entire border. I said make the border impassable by illegal aliens. I didn't say build a concrete wall that no one could go across.
You have said many times that you want the borders closed and don't let anyone in.
No, I never said that. Now you're making things up. In fact, if you read my last book, I had a much more intelligent plan than either of these points that you're raising. I suggested oil for illegals. Did you ever hear that idea?
No.
You didn't? That you didn't want to hear because you made up your mind that you're the intelligent, progressive liberal and I'm the oaf who can't think. That all conservatives are unthinking oafs. Well, I came up with an idea called oil for illegals. Make Mexico pay one barrel per oil per month for every illegal alien in America, which are estimated to be between 20 and 30 million illegals here. And make them pay 20 to 30 million barrels of oil a month to pay for the social services that these people are not entitled to, that they're gaining. What's wrong with that idea?
If it could work, then I would be all for it.
Well, now ask yourself why, if I wrote that idea in a best-selling book, not one of the lying schmucks on Fox News or anywhere else would have me on to discuss that idea. Can you answer that question?
I totally agree that the media is absolutely biased.
We know CNN is biased, but do you know that Fox News is also biased? Are you aware of that?
Yes, very much so.
All right. Why would they not take a conservative idea like that of oil for illegals? Because their bosses have said, we don't want to upset the Republican Party. And the Republicans don't want to demand anything from the Mexican government. Therefore, don't have that savage on the show. See, Steve, if you actually listen to me carefully, you'll find out that I am really an independent, as opposed to those who say they're independent, to let you think that they really are independent when they're really not independent. The fact of the matter is, I also have solutions. They're savage solutions that I offer. They're not just screaming and yelling and no ideas. The Democrats, unfortunately, feel that torture is bad, but they don't come up with a way to extract information from the enemy. They feel that illegal aliens are actually good for America. That's why they won't even pass a Voter ID Act. They're saying that anyone who wants to pass a Voter ID Act is bringing back slavery. Now, what person in their right mind would want an illegal alien to vote in America? I wouldn't. I hope that you wouldn't either.
Not at all. And listen,
You know what I'm hearing from you, Steve? I'm actually hearing that you're not as liberal as you think. You're more open-minded than you think, and you're open to ideas. And I want to thank you for listening to the Savage Nation.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, I realize the beauty of radio. Here's the beauty of radio. Here is why it's the entertainer's dream. This is the greatest medium for a great entertainer who is shy. Now, listen to what I just said to you. No one's ever said this in the history of entertainment, ever. This is brand new stuff. I've gone down into a whole new realm of reality here. I have an entertainer's personality. I have since I'm a child. I controlled it. I worked with it, highly educated, blah, blah, blah. But fundamentally, I've always enjoyed entertaining people for many different reasons, and I won't go into it right now. However, live performances are extremely demanding. And you ask anyone who does them what it takes out of people. They come off drained, and it really wrecks them in some ways. Yeah, you get the energy of the crowd. But getting up in front of people is really amazing. So now, listen to where I'm going. Let's say the numbers say that I have 8 to 10 million listeners a week. It's probably closer to 20 million on and off. But let's take the actual numbers of 8 to 10 million. That means that any 15-minute spread, there's 800,000 people listening to the show somewhere on the 300 or so stations that this radio show, The Savage Nation, has heard. 800,000 or so people every 15 minutes come in and out of the tent, so to speak. Now, can you imagine getting up in front of an audience of 800,000 people and trying to perform as naturally as I do? It's impossible. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the beauty of electronic performance, whether it be it has to be radio, because television actually gives you that feeling of the millions, the tens of millions of people, which is why so many of them are so homogenized, pasteurized, sanitized, pressurized, etc. And it's why many of us don't listen to the news anymore, because we know they're doing it because they've been homogenized, rather say doing a homogenized newscast that offends as few people as possible. Consequently, it's not worth listening to. Why listen to something that isn't truthful? Radio, on the other hand, is an intimate medium because the broadcaster, the performer in this case, is fundamentally in his own mind, in his own world, in his own room, in his own studio. So he doesn't even understand who he is reaching. He has no concept that he's talking to millions of people. He actually thinks he's talking to a couple of people, a small audience. Therefore, it's like an intimate performance inside a small nightclub. At its best, that's what radio ought to be. And that's what I do, is I project into a small audience in a small nightclub, which is why it seems so personal to you. Do you understand the difference between this show and some others? And I'm not knocking other shows directly, just indirectly.
Savage.
Passenger subdued on Dulles flight. Now, you have to read the whole article to find out who the passenger was as he tried to open the exit door of a jet during a flight from Los Angeles to Dulles. Man wearing military fatigues. Notice it says a man, not a white man, not a brown man, not a black man, not a pink man, not a Martian. It says a man. Associated Press says a man wearing military fatigues and throwing punches into the air tried to open the exit door of a jet during cross-country flight on Tuesday night, airline officials and passengers said. Then you read on and on and on. Then you get to the bottom. It says a man identified as Carlos Alberto de Oliveira was expected to appear Wednesday at Ludan County General Gun, interfering with the operation of an aircraft. The man wore patches on his fatigues with Special Forces and Jiu-Jitsu Champion logos, yet passengers subdued him. They beat him up on the floor. The man had been acting strangely for 20 minutes, then sat up, wrapped belts around his hands, and threw punches into the air, said passenger Ken Wolfenberger. Wolfenberger said he heard a flight attendant yell for help and tell a man, "Sir, get your hand off the handle." Wolfenberger said anytime you hear a flight attendant shout, "Please help," you worry that something pretty bad is going to happen. Wolfenberger said the man was held down and punched by other passengers. Can you imagine passengers punching an unruly passenger who simply wanted to get a breath of fresh air? After the passenger subdued him, air marshals came and took custody. After the passengers subdued him, air marshals came and took custody of the man. We don't know where the air marshals were during the initial altercation. I guess they were studying their books. They had to hit the laptop and see if they were able to do anything. The air marshal probably hit a page in the book and saying, "When a man tries to open a door of a moving aircraft, go to page 295 and see column B. Then when you get 295 column B, go to page 296A and see what you're entitled to do in rules of engagement. And then call Donald Rumsfeld to get back to the passengers on the airplane." No doubt it says that he has to arrest the passengers who subdued the guy who was trying to open the door because he didn't actually open the door. Now, since the man didn't actually succeed in opening the airline door, I suspect that he could get a lawyer who can sue the passengers who subdued him. That's because diversity is perversity. And if we don't break the chains of diversity, we're dead. The Islamo-fascists win. See, they're not bound by political cowardice. The Islamo-fascists, one thing you got to give them credit for is they're not bound by any rules whatsoever. They worship the devil, and so therefore they act like the devil. They're not bound by any such rules. They'll smash a plane into your daughter's kindergarten school if they could. So we have them now. Our guys get them through a drone. Picture them in a drone. The drone sends the images back to Donald Rumsfeld's putz is sitting in Washington. And the guys in the army say, "Kill him, kill him, kill him." And what Rumsfeld's lawyers say, "You can't kill him. It's not in the rules of engagement."
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash, Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. You know, when you talk about the enemy within, one could draw a very good comparison to the HIV virus, where a foreign virus invades a body and literally takes over a defense cell and duplicates itself inside the defense cell and so then kills the body by destroying its ability to defend itself. It's almost identical to the Madeleine Albrights who are now running around acting like they're our friends when in fact they're working for the enemy. So let's go to health for a minute. Of course, I talk every day about the health of a nation, but let's talk about the health of a body. Here's what Mark Twain said in Letters from the Earth. Disease, that is the main force, the diligent force, the devastating force. It attacks the infant the moment it is born. It furnishes it one malady after another. Croup, measles, mumps, bowel troubles, teething pains, scarlet fever, and other childhood specialties. It chases the child into youth and furnishes it some specialties for that time of life. It chases the youth into maturity, maturity into age, and age into the grave. Mark Twain. And now I want to read you just one little entry that I wrote back in, when it was published in 82 in Healing Children Naturally by yours truly on page 142 under chocolate. Now just listen to this, because many of you are chocolateholics and you've been told that chocolate's good. Mmm, it contains antioxidants, and mmm, I can eat more chocolate, and I can even give it to Johnny in the morning. Mmm, let's give him some cocoa. Mmm, that's what good old Doc Brown told me. Pay no attention to those quacks in the nutrition field. Mmm, give Johnny anything he wants to eat, because here's this little shiny pill called Ritalin. We call it medication, not a pill. And that medication will keep Johnny real, real stable. So here's what I wrote. Chocolate comes from the cacao tree, an evergreen of the Coca-Cola family. It does not contain caffeine, but it does contain another stimulant, theobromine, which has effects quite similar to those of caffeine. When used to make cocoa, the amount of theobromine present would be comparable to the caffeine in a cup of weak coffee or tea, approximately 30 milligrams. Of course, chocolate is also a saturated fat and high in calories, and when used in cocoa, it is usually sweetened with sugar. Now listen to the following few sentences, please. Copper is also abundant in chocolate and must be avoided by hyperactive children who often have low zinc and high copper levels. For the same reasons, we in the Savage home never use cocoa or hot chocolate for our children. They may seem innocent enough, but in fact are great nutritional time bombs filled with sucrose, bleaches, copper, artificial flavorings, and excess calories. Stick to warm milk flavored with carob powder and sweetened with honey, which makes a fine bedtime drink. Now, I've given you a lot of information there. I'm sure that the oafs in the media will say, oh, Bashaw, you give that child cocoa. Never mind what anyone says. After all, I went to high school, and I know about golf. What are you? Oh, you give him meat and you give him chocolate. You give him whatever medication that good old doctor has you give him. Because those doctors have the interests of your child at heart. And they know, all of them know, what good medication is. Well, it's identical to the political situation. You're going to believe in Dr. Baker? Dr. Baker has just given you a recipe for destroying the nation. That's what old Dr. James Baker has just prescribed. He may look like the doctor of yesteryear. You know, after all, he speaks like the old, good old American doctors. Tall, good-looking, speaks with a nice southern drawl, comes from a good law firm, great family. Well, he reminds me of the doctors that used to advertise Chesterfield cigarettes in the magazines of the 1930s. Exactly the same thing. They would have doctors say that I smoke Chesterfield for health because it's good for the T-zone. They were doctors, too. Well, now we have political doctors who are just like that doctor who used to sell Chesterfield. And the case before you is good old Dr. Baker. So if I've gone a little off topic, I've gone right back to topic, because that's how I do it. And that's the test of a good mind, is the ability to go far afield and come right back to the point that he's been trying to make all along. Now, I know if I keep up this health stuff, what's going to happen. I'll get a call. I'll say, Mike, I'm like that guy, that woman on the plane that had to bring matches on the plane the other day for flatulence. Mike, I asked, is there something I could take for so I don't have to take 10 books of matches on my next flight to Miami, Mike? What can I eat? What can I eat? Mike, while you're at on the thing for the matches, for the flatulence on the plane, can you give me something to make the down south part stand a little north, point north like a compass needle, Mike? I don't want to like that Viagra stuff. It gives me a headache and I see blue. And while you're at it, Mike, I'm going to get the same thing. I don't want to do health. Please, no health cures. Maine, Susie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just have a really quick question for you. I have a 16-year-old son. He goes to the gym two or three times a week, but he is overweight. I decided to take him to a nutritionist, and I just want to know what your opinion of nutritionists are. Are they helpful? Can they make a difference?
Most of them are quacks, uneducated adults who know nothing. They have no credentials whatsoever, but they are selling you a bill of goods based on other people's work. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't an occasional nutritionist with real training and a real degree and really understand what they're talking about, but a lot of them are in it and don't really know what they're talking about. You have to look at their education. You have to look at their experience. You have to look at their certifications. Now, you may say, well, I'll go to an RD. They're even worse. The research dietitian degree is a complete reflection of the AMA principles of diet, which are totally toxic and know nothing about curing people through food. So I don't know what to recommend. Well, I do know what to recommend, actually. I would recommend that you go to a medical doctor who has a subspecialty in nutrition. That would be what I would recommend. There are some very good doctors around who have spent a lot of years studying nutrition, and that's where I would take my son. As far as weight loss, I mean, there's no mystery to it. You know, it takes self-control, and it takes controlling the diet. I don't know what you need to go to a doctor for that for. Do you?
No, actually, his medical doctor did recommend this nutritionist to him, so I think
Well, so you're working with a medical doctor who probably hasn't, but the problem is, who is the nutritionist? A lot of them are self-taught. They read three articles in Cosmopolitan, and suddenly they're a nutritionist, so you got to look into that. Thanks for the call. You see, I have a show that could be called How Not to Make Friends and Influence People. But you got to think about, how did people survive for eons without nutritionists? How did people survive for eons without going to these quacks and taking a Ritalin? How did your great-grandfather survive? How did they survive the Middle Ages eating shoe leather? And they were still able to read and write. How is that possible that Western civilization was built before Ritalin was discovered by the quack establishment called the pharmaceutical medical establishment? How is it possible? There must have been people who were hyperactive then. There must have been. How did they deal with it? Everybody knows people like that. They didn't need drugs. They walked a lot. They talked a lot. But they somehow got through life without having to take a drug to turn it into a zombie. 1-800-449-8255. It's the parents who are behind ADHD. They're lazy and they're feeding the child junk food. 90% of the ADHD cases can be cured if the parents were educated as to how they're poisoning their child, number one, and how they're being lazy and not feeding the child properly. Much of this information is well established. It's been lost because the pharmaceutical and medical establishments want you to lose it, just as the political establishment wants you to forget history in order to manipulate you. It's the same exact thing. It's called the establishment. They control everything. Now, if you look at the control of the media by the few madmen who control it all, you'll find out, unfortunately, they also control the educational establishment through boards that they sit on. They also control the pharmaceutical establishment through boards. They sit on multiple boards. So the same power-mad lunatic who runs the media that tells you things about food that are untrue and tells you things about politics that are patently false will also be peddling you drugs that are unnecessary and peddling you diets that are clearly harmful. That's called interlocking corporate directorships. Check it out. It was once well established and well understood that interlocking corporate directorships would ultimately lead to the demise of the American. They were 100% right, and we're living through it now. I'm getting the calls right now, and I'll do them. Actually, this is fun. Beverly in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Ask you something, Dr. Savage.
Do you know that cancer is a leading cause of children's death? Did you know that? Did you know that one of the most suppressed statistics of our time is that more children under the age of 15 die of cancer, including leukemia, than of any other cause aside from accidents? Do you know why we don't hear about children dying of cancer? Do you know why we don't see children who are bald in the back rooms of hospitals? Because the AIDS racketeers have knocked up the entire sympathy racket. You are only allowed to hear about AIDS and the suffering of AIDS and relationship to AIDS and only AIDS victims and AIDS this and AIDS that. And the children are left behind dying in the back rooms of the hospitals because they don't have a voice to speak for them. That's one of the reasons I wrote this book.
What can women do for PMS? I went to a doctor.
Did you open up a very, very tragic subject, because there are things you can do, but I'm not about to give you medical information on this show at this time. I really only wanted to bring up this book because the ADHD came up as a break from the political discussion. But there are many things you can do for PMS. And I think, truthfully, and this is not a bad idea, if you go to one of these mega health food operations around, you know, like Whole Foods kind of thing, is there one near you?
Yes, sir. And I take a lot of vitamins and I eat salmon.
No, but listen to me. If you go there, you know, you can get an education unto itself. Now, some of it's quackery and some of it's hucksterism. But some of what you're going to read in some of those brochures is worth thinking about. I'll tell you where I'd begin today, Beverly, with anything. The internet has become the great unifier of knowledge. Some of it's junk, but some of it's excellent. I would simply do a search on the PMS and health, and I would read as much as I could, and I would sift and I would sort, and then I would try to consult with a medical doctor, an MD, who definitely has training in nutrition. Don't just go to any old Joe Blow MD who knows nothing about nutrition. They need to have studied nutrition. They need to specialize in it along with their medical degree. And you're going to get some wonderful advice right there. But I'm not going to give any advice today on this subject. Salim, a Muslim in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for having me on the show, Dr. Savage. Just wanted to say, I support the show in the sense that one of the things I know as a Muslim is that we all have to fight for our freedoms of speech. And if you're not able to have freedom of speech, then what does a Muslim guy like me have a chance of holding on to freedoms?
Yeah, and you wouldn't even have a chance to dislike me verbally. For example, if I lost my freedom of speech, then people who dislike me would be next. Exactly. We'd be living in a dictatorship. I mean, that's the lesson here. That's absolutely the lesson, Salim.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, I'm a trained biologist, so permit me to digress for a moment. I was reading various internet stories about an introduced species of fish that was introduced into an ecosystem. They brought it from some foreign country to kill something or other, and it wound up devouring all of the native species of fish and took over the entire lake. And then I was thinking about radical Islam as a sort of, it's certainly not a different species, but it's a different species of religion than any we've ever seen. And it's devouring all other religions around the planet. It cannot cooperate, you see, with any other religion. It says, you do it our way or we kill you. That's all. Simple. So it's sort of the piranha fish of religions. The radical Islamists practice a piranha like religion, let's put it to you that way, now that we're developing the idea a little bit more. But I'll go back to the biological story for you again. Let us say you have a body of water, a fairly large one, and there are many species of fish and fowl and various plants in there. And then you introduce a strange type of fish from, let us say, Egypt. And the reason you do so is because you're an environmentalist. And you don't want to use toxic sprays to kill, let's say, mosquitoes. So you bring in a type of fish from Egypt because you read somewhere in a book while you were getting your master's degree from Duquesne Community College before you were hired by the state of Michigan, for example, because you're a dummy and you couldn't get any other job, so you took a job for the government. So the dummy says, I read about this and it killed the mosquitoes in Egypt. Let's bring it in. And you bring it in, you put it in the lake. And you wake up 2 years later and almost all the other species of fish are killed. And this one has proliferated and taken over the lake. That's exactly what's going on in America today as a result of illegal immigration. And illegal immigration is tied to radical Islam, directly tied there, tied at the hip. Had the doors to America not been taken off the hinges by Bill Clinton under Doris Meisner, the INS chief, because I remember her name, I remember her so well. Because for years I railed against her. I thought she should be jailed for what she was doing to America back in the early 90s when I started in radio. I said, take her out of the INS commissioner. I said, she's killing America. She's letting too many flood in. She's bringing in particularly too many Middle Easterners who will wind up destroying us. Nothing was done. In fact, Bush came along. We prayed he would be better. He's much worse on immigration, far worse. Whereas Bill Clinton pulled the door to Mexico and the rest of the world open, Bush unscrewed the hinges and threw the door into the Gulf of Mexico. Now, I am telling you as I sit here, and I don't really give a rat's behind if anyone is insulted. Radical Islam is incompatible with the rest of the world. And I want to know why. I want to know what it is about Islam itself, the Quran itself, that permits so many people to misinterpret it and become suicide bombers. What is it about this religion? I mean, if I read the Old Testament, nowhere does it say I should kill my neighbor if he doesn't practice my religion. If I read the New Testament, the Christian Bible, nowhere in that Bible does it say kill a Buddhist if he doesn't become a Christian. If I read Hindu tractates, nowhere does it say kill Buddhists if they don't become Hindus. And if I read the beautiful lyrical poetry of Buddhism, nowhere does it say kill the others if they do not become Buddhists. There is only one piranha religion on the planet. That piranha religion will kill all of us unless we stop it cold now. Stop it cold now where there's no nation left. And I don't need anyone in the media to confirm what I'm saying. I need to confirm what they're thinking. They don't need to confirm what I'm saying because they don't have an idea what the heck they're talking about.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot. Full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. The sound and fury quote from Shakespeare's Macbeth. He's talking about the ephemeral nature of life and how brief it is. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage. And then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. I think many of us feel this and don't talk about it. We take the Prozac, or we take the psychic Prozac called television, or the psychic Prozac called football or baseball or basketball or rap music or whatever it may be, or the crack or the cocaine or the marijuana or the alcohol or whatever it may be, or the running. And you can get very, very cynical about it all and say, what's the point of trying if it's all a charade and we're going to die anyway? You know, that's depressing. And there are many answers to that question that are life-affirming. There are many reasons to go on. Again, to go back, I learned so much in my childhood, I didn't even know I was learning it. That's the beautiful part of it. In that sense, I would say I had a very rich childhood because so much was seen and heard and overheard. And I look back now, look, here's a story I told maybe once for 2 seconds relating to the ephemeral nature of life and how you can really go down, you know, off the deep end if you look at this the wrong way and you don't have the right spiritual or emotional support. There was a woman in the neighborhood in Queens, attached houses. I can't get any more detailed. The attached houses, which to us was a gigantic step up. It was like the Queens Palace from where I had come from, a little green yard. And one of the neighbors in the block, he was really high class because he was a doctor. So he had a wife who had a nervous breakdown, so-called. I don't even think they use the phrase anymore, nervous breakdown. I don't even know what it is. What happened was she stayed at home all day and she wandered the streets of Queens, or that neighborhood, and she would take people's arms and say, what's the meaning of living if we're only going to die? Now, she had 2 children and the other women didn't know what to say to her. She could not understand why she should live if only she was going to die. Then she would say, but my children are also born to die. I mean, that spooked out a lot of the women in the neighborhood, so they stopped talking to her. Now, maybe she was, in her own way, touching upon the sound and fury quote from Shakespeare of tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And haven't you seen that picture? And how did you get past that? What gives you the reason to struggle and go on? Why do you struggle? You ever look at your children and say, they're too going to fade like dust, ashes to ashes and dust to dust? And yes, we all get those thoughts if we're you. When you look at your pet, your fish, your dog, your cat, you know, I got a box upstairs with ashes in it. I got a mother and a father and a brother in a grave and a grandmother and grandfather and ancestors in graves, as you do. We all do. And yet, you know, it's a strange society. We never talk about death in that way. All we talk about is victimhood and suffering and how everyone's a victim. But do we really talk about the meaning of life and the meaning of death, or only about death as an opposite to life, meaning you're no longer a consumer? See, once you die, you're of no use to the Murdochs and the Morlocks and the meatheads who need you as a consumer, an idiot to watch or an idiot to buy. In other words, a consumer. If you're dead, you're no longer a good consumer, except perhaps you can still buy a casket from one of these operations. Perhaps they'll figure out a way to sell you a conservative casket or a liberal casket with an inscription on it. It's probably not a bad business. where they now start monogramming caskets or something. But what motivates me to go on, for example? How do I do this every day? Why do I do this anymore? I don't really need the income. My children are grown. They're doing very well. I have enough to, you know, basically retire on. I could have retired a long time ago. Why do I do this? You'll have to ask yourself, why am I not as desperate to sell you something as some men are who are younger with young children? And I understand why they have to peddle and they have to sell you and they have to con you day and night to sell you another item or another. I understand it. They're younger than me by probably 20 years, many of them, and they haven't made their fortune or their marks, and they're very insecure about that. So they continue to sell you things that you don't really need. So therefore, if I'm not really selling you anything, what is it that motivates me every day? Well, it's an obligation to God primarily. I know you say, well, who is he kidding? What, are you kidding me? Take it for what it is. I don't really care whether you believe me or not. I know I mean every word I just said to you. You see, I was ruined in life several times, primarily by liberalism. Liberalism destroyed me, or almost destroyed me, and almost put me into the grave. The liberals, through affirmative action, stole my birthright. They took it from me. They turned me into a nun person, and they said that less qualified women and less qualified minorities only need apply. And they said, you shall not apply, even though you are a white male, you're of no value whatsoever, to our new America. Well, it was tough for me to bear. And had I let it get to me, I would have died or never struggled again. And I told you what happened. I told you how it happened. And it's amazing. It was a certain time in my life, and it was about 16 years ago. And everything had gone bad for me because of affirmative action and because of a few scoundrels in the vitamin business, ruthless gonoffs of the lowest order. Things had gone really bad for me. And I wanted to give up. I really did. Well, my son, we were living in and this is an interesting story in a way. I had to move back to a house that I had purchased, a small house that I'd purchased a few years before as a rental unit. And things had gotten so bad, I had to move into my own rental unit. And it wasn't a happy time for us. The children were still teenagers, blah, blah, blah. So I was sitting in this dark little horrendous room that I called a study, which was really a converted nursery. It was disgusting with a little tiny window. There was nothing. There was no nobility in it whatsoever. It was a complete failure. And this was after a PhD, two master's degrees, 16 books. No matter what I did, it was like I had dug for oil. I was like a wildcatter, and 1,000 wells had come up dry. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. So I called my son in, who was a teenager, and I said, son, I'm not going to work anymore. I'm going to retire because I there's no point to this. Well, he said to me, you can't retire. He said, that's giving up. He said, men retire at 65. I got so pissed off at him, I chased him out of the room, and I ran after him down the block. And you know what? Because of that, I was embarrassed. And for him, I had to get off my behind, get out of the gutter, and I had to struggle again. That's when I created the tape, the first radio tape. So help me God. A few months later, I created the mock radio tape and sent it out to 400 stations. And the rest is really history. That turned me around. But, you know, it was based upon a lot of prayer and a lot of thought and family. Family keeps us together. So having said that, I had only asked God for one thing. During the darkest moments of my failures, or really I should say the failures of our society, which took some of the most talented white men in history and put them on the shelf in order to promote people who were less qualified simply to make people feel better and in order to introduce socialism to America at a faster pace. I said to God, all I ask you for is to give me a living. I beg you not for riches. I beg you not for fame. I beg you only for a living. Well, I now have a very good living in talk radio and as a writer. But you see, it came with a burden. Remember I told you that God answered my prayers, but there's always something attached to his answer. He didn't say, here, go, you're going to win the lottery. Because if he had said, here, because you suffered so much, my son, put $4 on number 933B7, and you're going to win $90 million in fastball or something. Well, I probably would have blown my head off by now if I had won some kind of lottery. I'm a worker. I was raised to work. I'm going to work until probably I can't work anymore. And it's because I was raised this way. It's in my genes. My father, to him, the most important value in a boy was working. Every time he mocked me, it was because I was too lazy or I wasn't working hard enough. And the way he mocked me is he would say to his friends when I was a little boy in his store, look at this, look at the worker I have for a son. He's a real hard worker, isn't he? And the other men would say, oh, come on, leave him alone. He's not a bad kid. He'll be a good worker. And my father would look at me and sarcastically say, you look at the worker I have, always dozing off or something to that effect. So to him, work was a great value. It's almost laughable in this hedonistic age that we live in where work is considered de classe. Well, I know that there are many men who have much less than I do financially who are retired. And good luck to you if you are, and I understand it. But I'm not made that way. I wouldn't know what to do with myself from the beginning of the day to the end. I wouldn't know how to spend my time. Now, maybe that's sad. Maybe it is sad that I don't know how to enjoy myself on a golf course or a tennis court. It is possible, but it's not in my genes. I did not learn how to play golf. I learned how to sled on a cobblestone street in the Bronx. I did not learn how to ski. And when I went to college, there were kids even in Queens College or Working College who were going to ski lifts and skiing. I'm not a skier. I didn't understand the fun of skiing, and I know those who do. In fact, when my children were very young, I took them skiing. I taught them how to ski. I figured it's a great American sport, and I admire those who can really ski. But when I have gone to the mountains in the last few years during ski season, I don't want to ski. It's a zoo. It's a zoo. It looks like a bunch of automatons. Clankety, 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 clank. Line them up. Here they come. Take them up, shoot them down. Get them drunk at night. Take them up, shoot them down. Get them drunk at night. Take them up, shoot them down. Clankety, clank, clankety, clank. Where's the beauty in that? I used to go to the High Sierras, and I used to walk in the winter. I used to snow walk. I don't do it anymore. You know why? Because of yahoos on snowmobiles. I won't even walk in the woods anymore. Do I want to listen to a putt shooting by on a snowmobile, shooting out dirty, ugly fumes on a snowfield that I used to walk on? In the absolute silence, did you ever hear the silence of a snowfield? Can you still hear it? The whoosh and the hiss of snow and sound? America has become a gigantic noise cesspool. There's almost nowhere to go anymore for any peace and quiet. Every neighborhood, there's not a neighborhood in America that is affluent and beautiful that you can live in any peace. Because everyone is greedier than his neighbor. I think I'll put in marble. I think I'll put in granite. I think I'll put in granite. I think I'll put in granite. I'll put in granite and I'll flip it and I'll make money and I'll screw the next person. Everyone's suddenly Donald Trump. Everyone's a Donald Trump, and from morning till night, every house is being renovated. Every house is being redone. You can't even live in your own houses anymore. So tell me where to go to get peace and quiet in the United States of America. You have an answer to that one? Well, I guess you have to move to the country. You got to move to the country. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty place from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. This is the Savage Nation hoping to signify something.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Everybody I know with a brain and a conscience is frustrated. And here is why we are frustrated. We are at war. We are in a third war. But the political media class plays all sides against the middle. They won't say Islamo-fascist. They won't say the Islamo-fascist set off the bombs in Egypt. They won't say Islam is the problem. They won't say it. And we know it. We are being invaded by General Vicente Fox and his millions of soldiers. But Bush won't say, Mr. President, take back your illegals. Instead, Bush gives us another soursop speech about we're a nation of immigrants and we've got to be nice and we got to be kind. That is why we are all frustrated. We are at war, but the political media class refuses to say Islam is at war with us. We are being invaded by General Vicente Fox and his minions, but Bush won't say, Mr. President, take back your illegals. So we, the people, feel frustrated. We feel frustrated by the lies. We feel frustrated by the liberal media, the liberal government, and the liberal entertainment class. They're all one and the same. They're all part of the same problem. Now, they are not really our enemy. They are our fellow citizens. They're misguided, some of them. They're doing it for craven political reasons. They're not evil people, none of these people. Evil people are those you are about to hear. This protest, so-called, by the Islamic Thinker Society outside the Israeli consulate in New York City said, Zionists, you will pay. The wrath of Allah is on its way. The mushroom cloud is on its way. The real Holocaust that's on its way. Akbar, Allah, Allah, Bakbar, Allah, Bakbar. And it says that they're going to spill the blood of Jews. Now, this is in the streets of New York City. There are two things that are wrong with this picture. One, these scum should have been rounded up, found guilty of terrorism that afternoon, and shot, as far as I am concerned. Number two, there is no Jewish leadership in this country, which is the main problem. The Jews are hiding in the Warsaw ghetto of their own mind. The Jews around the world are hiding in the Warsaw ghetto sewers of their own mind. They're afraid to come up and stand up and say, drop dead, you'll die first. Israel has become the Warsaw ghetto of its own kind. Israel, the entire nation, is like a Warsaw ghetto. It has the Warsaw ghetto victim mentality. In a short period of time, they went from a warrior nation to have become a victim nation. The entire nation of Israel stands there being beaten every day, whipped every day. Occasionally, they fire a shot back. Why are they doing this? What happened to Israel? But I concern myself mostly with what the mentality has done to America. We are becoming like a Warsaw ghetto of our own mind here in America. None of us are able to stand up anymore and speak out without being roundly called racist or thisist or thatist. The fact of the matter is this country is being overrun by illegal aliens. The fact of the matter is because of immigration, out of control immigration, Islamic scum of the type you're going to hear not only got into this country and brought their vermin with them, but they threatened to kill all of us here. And the government does nothing. The wrath of Allah is on its way. The mushroom cloud is on its way. The real Holocaust is on its way. I say give them a Holocaust before they give us a Holocaust. I say nuke those rat bastards before they nuke us. And I don't know what it's going to take until we get a leader in this country to save us. But that is why the people of this country are both turning off politically, why they're frustrated, why they're angry, and why they're fearful. We have spineless leadership, if you want to call it leadership at all. The political, media, entertainment class playing all sides against the middle. They won't say we're being invaded by Mexico. They won't say we're being overrun by Islamo-fascists. But we the people know we are. We the people know we are being invaded. We the people know what needs to be done. But we don't have General Patton, do we? We have General Patent Leather. We don't have General MacArthur, do we? We have General McKennedy instead. And then, of course, on the political level, we have total sellouts like Schwarzenegger, who has declared upon himself that he's now a scientist. And he's declared by fiat that he knows that global warming is caused by man. Although the scientific community, science community rather, is still out on this and debating it vigorously. In fact, the movement within the science community itself is moving away from mankind causing global warming. We are in a slight warming phase, but the general consensus is that it is caused by natural phenomena that we can do nothing about, such as sunspots and whatnot. And yet, this does not stop lying politicians from making it up out of whole cloth. We are at war. Islamofascism is at war, and they're winning. And they're winning, by the way. Despite the tough talk, they're winning. We are a house divided. They're not divided at all. When have you last heard an Islamic of any stripe say one word against suicide bombings or the war on the West, against the West? Name one. Name one. I dare you. I know there are here and there brave Muslims who are speaking out because they understand that this is a catastrophe for them. They're going to lose, by the way. They will lose. We're going to lose. But in the end, they disappear altogether if they keep this up. Because when push comes to shove, the military will conduct a coup in the United States, and they'll take care of business. They're going to throw away the liberal class that has ruined this country, the liberal class that has basically conducted a coup upon this nation, the liberal class that has conducted a coup upon the military, the liberal class that has conducted a coup upon the survival of America. And I am telling you, if this keeps up, there's liable to be a military coup in this nation, and the military will eventually save this country. Now, you may say, is he crazy? Is he gone off the rail? I don't care what you think of me, frankly. I'm not trying to sound like somebody from Fox News. I'm not trying out for a job in television. I am way past caring about it. I am doing this for one reason only. I am doing this because America needs me.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. Why would a newspaper man call those who cut people's heads off and kill our troops insurgents, rebels, instead of terrorists? Why? Now, you have to go back 30 years to understand how perverted and twisted they are. Years ago, there was a movement in this country to change the way we looked at deviants. And as a result, they have blurred moral boundaries. They promoted social disintegration. And as a result of the agitation of these 30 years, as Daniel Patrick Moynihan once wrote, deviance has been defined down. So, for example, years ago, we understood what a bum was. We knew what a junkie was. We knew what a pervert was. We knew what a suicidal maniac was, right? And most of us still do. But guys like those who published the Chronicle could still call guys who cut people's heads off and kill our boys insurgents because they don't call junkies junkies. They call them injection drug users. They don't call promiscuous teenagers sluts. They call them acting out their sexual imperative, for example. They don't call them homeless bums who need to be institutionalized. They call them rebels. They call them sort of Walt Whitman-esque-like rebels, rebelling against a oppressive society. And so what they do is they try to turn everything that's deviant into the norm, and everyone who is normal into the deviant. And so they're insane. That's why I say liberalism is a mental disorder. And if you're going to let those in the asylum dictate to you what you should be thinking, you're going to wind up crazy. So what have they done? They've taken deviance and eliminated the concept completely. So, for example, they've diffused your strong sanctions against pedophilia. They call it part of a normal erotic continuum, pedophilia. Anyone who took their own life was considered a suicidal person, and you would try to stop them in the past for their own good. There's no greater thing but to keep a person from killing them, to jump off a bridge, you save them. That's why people jump in the water to save others. The mentally whacked out liberals of this country have now twisted assisted suicide, which is a very stigmatized behavior, suicide, into just another treatment that should be available to a patient. Everyone has become a client, and so they have transformed your ideas about what you should and what you should not tolerate. You should tolerate all of these deviances and never call them a deviance. But you must never tolerate religious dogma. That's the one thing you must never tolerate. And so, consequently, they've broken down the moral boundaries. They have romanticized the insane. And they've created a state of social disintegration in this country. is what they have done. Without social norms, there can be no society whatsoever. There was a wonderful book written on this subject that you probably never heard of. It was an academic book called The Politics of Deviance by Anne Hendershot, written in 2002. It came and went. No one ever heard of it, but it's a brilliant book. There's some great things out there. Really brilliant people understand what's going on. And my job is to teach it to you every day in an entertaining format. And I try to do that for you. So just be aware of the fact that your tolerance is actually a reflection of your loss of clarity. Your tolerance for virtually anything and your anything-go attitude is not a mark of liberalism. It's a mark of the degeneration of your ability to judge anything. And yet you maintain your right to judge Christians, don't you? You'll judge Christians, but you won't judge Muslims. You'll judge America's troops, but you won't judge the throat cutters. You'll judge George Bush, but you won't judge Bill Clinton for what he did when he dropped bombs on the Serbian people. So you're really warped. You're just a warped, biased personality who pretends that you're an enlightened, advanced, futuristic human being. But you're not. And now most of America has awakened to the fact that, A, they're not alone, and, B, that they actually have the power. And you're now in the minority, those of you on the other side. You're on the dark side of reality. And we are going to try and save this country, period, end of story. Don't you understand it's really a battle? And who started it? We didn't start it. In fact, you probably grew up in the same world we grew up in. But because you were so quick, you on the other side of this culture war, to embrace the concepts of radicalism, you think that you have discovered something new and you feel you've broken the chains of oppression. When in fact, I can hear your chains rattling. The more you scream that you have broken the chains of oppression, the louder I hear your chains rattling. You are nothing but a monkey in a cage. And the more you scream about racism and homophobia and sexism and thisism and thatism and bigotry, the more I know you are nothing but a monkey in a cage and your chains are rattling. And let me tell you something, I'd like to free you. I really would like to unlock that chain around your leg and get that ball and chain off your foot, because you are a prisoner. And I don't even blame you. You're a product of our society. You've been brainwashed since childhood from television shows like that on KQED and PBS. I never let my children watch Big Bird. Never. I turned the show off. I knew it was a propaganda tool. And it was. And so forth and so on. You get the picture. Fill in the blanks yourself. Take the pen and follow it through. Be a John Nagy. Fill in the picture. We're facing an enemy worse than Hitler. Worse than Hitler. Why do I say worse than Hitler? Because Hitler was unabashedly evil. Everyone knew that. Everyone could see that. It was no ambivalence about Hitler and the Nazis. Everyone in America understood he was our enemy. But now we're facing an enemy that's far worse than Hitler. Radical Islamists who have wrapped themselves in a religion and stolen a religion. And because of that, all of you bigoted leftists who have no qualms about attacking Christians won't say boo about the radical Islamists. Guys like Phil Bronstein in the Chronicle, I have no idea why he's still there, a failing newspaper that's in the toilet. The circulation goes down and down, and they keep a guy like that there. Not a positive word about what went on in Iraq. Not a salute to the troops. Not an attack upon these vile enemies of freedom and of everything that we believe in. How did this happen to a man? I'm sure he was a good man, raised probably in the same kind of family I was raised in. How does a man raised in the same background wind up like this? I will tell you how, and how millions of other decent people wind up in that time warp of unreality called liberalism. That is, they live in a cocoon where their ideas and only their ideas and that of their close circle are expressed. They never, ever meet anyone outside their small circle of liberalism, of liberals. They agree with each other. It's a small closed circuit. And therefore, if they go to a dinner party at a fancy person's home, they express enlightened ideas. They know there's global warming, even though the scientific community is out on that. If ever there is a dissident opinion raised at one of these dinner parties, which is very rare, because no one is permitted into these cloistered environments unless they've been pre-approved, and unless the gatekeepers have approved of them and given them entrance to their fancy little parties of stupidity, why, that person is laughed at as a sort of eccentric, to be accepted sort of as an eccentric who's a fool of the other side. A throwback to, let's say, more primitive times in America. And so they live in their own world. The newspapers fail. The circulation keeps going down. And they don't even understand that they're going out of business because there are no consequences. There are no consequences because there's no ownership. If there was still a person who owned the newspaper, they'd fire the hack and say, damn it, my circulation's dying. I want a report on my desk by Friday on why the people aren't buying your paper. And then by next Friday, I want a report on my desk of how to make them buy the paper. I give that report in the next 5 seconds. Stop publishing anti-family, anti-Christian, anti-American, anti-military, anti-police stories in your damn newspaper. Start publishing stories that support those things, and your sales will go up. They know that, though. And we say, well, ipso facto, if they know that, why don't they publish those stories? The answer is because they don't want to, because then they won't be invited to these silly soirees. They won't be invited to the silly soirees if they start publishing things like that. So in other words, these newspapers, these anachronisms called newspapers, are simply social commentary for those who own them. It's their way of saying, here's what I believe in, through the factotums called writers, whoever writes for them. How do you explain talk radio in general being a boom industry? How do you explain a show like mine, a one-man band? Yeah, I have people who work with me. They're wonderful people. But it's all about me 3 hours a day. How do you explain this phenomenon? In a city like San Francisco, as radically twisted to the left as it is, I will tell you there's an underserved population in this city, for example. I meet them every day. I walk the streets and people come out of cafes and restaurants, older people generally, but not only older people. And they look at me with hope and they say, Michael Savage, I love what you say. I only wish that we heard it more. Over and over and over again, I hear it wherever I go. And I hear it at first here, and then I hear it there, and then it becomes a roar. And one day it's going to become more than a roar. One day this will become the dominant viewpoint in America again. Only it's got to become that sooner rather than later if we are to defeat the enemy. What enemy am I talking about? Radical Islam is the enemy external, and the enemy internal is the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild, and the entire pack of anti-family, anti-Christian, anti-American deviants. Those are your enemies. They're trying to destroy your country.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Many Democrats had more positive things to say about your comprehensive proposal than many Republicans did. Do you think a Democratic Congress gives you a better shot at comprehensive immigration reform?
You know, I should have brought this up. I do. I think we have a good chance. And thank you. It's an important issue, and I hope we can get something done on it. I meant to put that in my list of things that we need to get done. I would hope Republicans have recognized that we've taken very strong security measures to address one aspect of comprehensive immigration reform.
Worker provision.
Well, that's got to be an integral part of a comprehensive plan. When you're talking comprehensive immigration reform, one part of it is a guest worker program where people can come on a temporary basis to do jobs Americans are not doing.
Amnesty is in the air. That's why his dad and Clinton are such pals. It's all worked out. John McCain, not enough hair. That's what it comes down to. The people go for hair. They get a long-haired male, the Republicans, he might stand a chance. Some kind of rocker, right-wing rocker could win. With tattoos, he might win, I swear, the way the world is. Carl Levin, yeah, I bet you he thinks he could be vice president one day. God, the egos on these guys, I just can't imagine being them. I can't understand what they think of themselves off camera, like at home alone in a toilet. How do they live with themselves? They're so important. They're such important people. Like when they sit down in the toilet, I mean, do they say, I'm an important person and I'm on the toilet now? How do they deal with that? When they sit down with a fork in front of a television set to eat, what do they say? I'm an important person with a fork in front of a television set and I'm eating mashed potatoes? When do they not be important persons? When do they start being people? I don't know. I think there's a certain degree of we know that there has to be a certain degree of madness to be a politician. You have to, you know, who would want to do this? Why do you want people to adulate you and know everything about everything you do every second of the day? Who would want that? I'm a recluse. Radio is perfect for me. I never liked employees. I don't like telling anyone what to do. I'd rather do it myself. I'd rather take the garbage out myself. You know why? Because I know how to put the garbage in the can better than a maid. If she put the garbage in the can, I'd go down there. She would do it wrong. I don't like the way she put it in the garbage can. She'd probably turn the bag upside down and throw the loose garbage into the can. Me, I tie the bag up and put it in the can so it doesn't rot. I'm giving an example. Most things I'd rather do myself. I'd rather do my own laundry. Why? I know how much soap to use so I don't itch. Also, if they throw a towel in too high a heat, you know how many years it took me? You know how many decades it took me to figure out why certain towels turn into like straw? You spend $100 on a towel, wash it wrong once, it's straw. You may as well be in a Ukrainian boys club in 1940. The towel is like sandpaper with one wrong drying. You got to read the label on like Egyptian cotton. It's crazy what you have to do to wash a towel right. Cold water, warm water, light water, spin dry, low. You can't give it to a maid. Everything to a maid is like industrial, like from Guatemala. They figure that everybody's like a manual laborer working in Greece. And so they wash your clothing with so much detergent and they dry it hot. I mean, it burns the towel. That's the way you do overalls from a guy who was underneath a car all day, let's say working in a chicken processing plant. So what I'm saying, I'd rather do my own towels and my own underwear. Otherwise, I like ruin my skin. And that's why I'd rather analyze things for myself instead of turning to like Dick Morris. I'm going to listen to Dick Morris tell me what I'm supposed to think, or a guy on television. That's why you love me. You know why you love me. It's because I'm like you. That's the truth. You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
1-800, there's a fly in the studio. I like to kill it. I can't get to it. Don't you hate flies when they get... And I'm the kind of guy that lets flies out of a window, if I can. There's no windows here, no screens. I want to just kill it with a newspaper. In 2 minutes, you're going to hear me running after a fly. I hate flies. I hate them. They remind me of liberals. They always buzz around. They leave fecal matter everywhere. They supply nothing positive to the environment. You know, they're always buzzing. A bee I don't even mind as much as a fly. A bee I never get, it doesn't bother me because I can see a bee. It doesn't weave and bob like a fly. A fly has a certain agility that a bee doesn't. Bees leave you alone by and large. A fly looks to bother you just because it can. My father taught me a trick, may rest in peace. You take an undershirt off your body. It's an old European trick, and you swing it overhead. You ever see the old men do that years ago? There's no old men around anymore. There's no, where are the old men in this country? You never see them. When I grew up, there were old men around. There were old men, middle-aged men, young men. Today, everyone tries to look alike. With Viagra and hair transplants, it's like one continuum from age 15 till death. Everyone has dark hair, false teeth. And they can be sexually aroused till they go into the coffin. My day, you got old, and that was the end of it. They were old, younger, though. The truth is, in my day, 40 was 60. 60 was 40. 80 was 60. I don't know how it happened. So, like, a 60-year-old today is like a 40-year-old then, right? And in those days, they died young at 50, 55, a lot of them. It was like 75, 78. Well, they ate like they didn't know what they were doing. You ever take a look at their diets? Smoked all day, didn't exercise, didn't take a vitamin, no diet. Never heard of a garlic. They drank the wrong alcohol, you know. So, you know, you can kill any good genetic inheritance with that kind of situation. You could see I'm already, you know what I really want to do is have fun. I am having fun. Maybe it's too much fun. Maybe you want me to just do pure, you know, stuff for you. I don't know. I'm not in the mood. I have a friend I heard that I know from 30 years ago, listens to the show avidly in New York. Now, I haven't spoken to him in 20 years, but I heard he listens. And he actually knows that I really, when I told the story of the midget in the seedy hotel in Florida from 25 years ago, there really was a midget, and he really did rob all of my money and his money, and we had to call the police, and the police were in on the take. Remember that story? AC, if you're listening to this show, would you call and confirm that there was a midget in that flea bag hotel in Miami back in the 60s? It really did exist. I was a naive kid from New York. We took the Greyhound bus down to Florida. We couldn't even afford a $69 air ticket. So it was like intercession, and we took the – what bus? Were Greyhound, probably. Greyhound bus to Florida. I remember to this day it went on – it was like a Midnight Cowboy. Right? It was like Midnight Cowboy. I mean, you know, like through Atlanta, there were like chicken bones in the aisle already. People were throwing food on it. You know, like eating chicken and throwing it on the floor. It got so filthy. Who would use a – you know, you really have to be a hero to use a Greyhound toilet. I would never. I'd rather bust inside than. Imagine going into a bus toilet in this day and age. Imagine what kind of needles are in there or whatever. I never, even as a kid, I wouldn't use a bus toilet. My God, the thought of it. The driver was like, he was telling you there's a restroom in the back of the bus? Forget about it. It's like apartheid, man. Take that bus. It was the best fried chicken I ever tasted in my life was you know, what do I know? Everything with me is food. So I came from New York, and my mother would try to make fried chicken. It was okay, but I didn't like the oil. It didn't taste good. So I figured I'm in Atlanta at the bus stop. I'll try in the cafeteria, the Greyhound cafeteria in Atlanta. Now I'm going to try the cuisine of the South in this place. What did I know? I was a kid from New York. I had no idea. I figured, all right, I'm in the South. I'm going to try Southern fried chicken. Where am I going to try it? The Greyhound bus terminal. It was excellent. It was unbelievable. Those days, there was no KFC. They do a pretty good job, KFC. I've told you that. I haven't eaten it for a while. I got to try it again. I need to, like a hand. Maybe that's why I have a skin condition, not enough grease. You know, I bet you I cut down on the fats too much. Some break, my skin became tight. Maybe if I had a high-fat diet. You know what? What if I went to a high-cholesterol diet for a few days? I guarantee, no, I went and got the fish oil today. The Norwegian, the nitrogen-infused $18 variety of cod liver oils from special hippie fish from Norway. Fish that are, they're all socialists. They're not racist. They're not homophobic fish. They danced in certain aquariums, and then they were harvested peacefully in their old age. And their livers were extracted gently by Dr. Death from his jail cell and infused with nitrogen. I actually feel better from it, the fish liver oil. But I don't like it. I grew up on it. Thank God I had fish liver oil as a child. I got to tell you the truth. With the diet I ate, what she put into my mouth, you know how they force feed a goose to make pate? I was close to second in a human form. Well, because they came from poverty in the old world, so they had a little money. The first thing it did was feed you. They didn't intend to give you a heart attack at 12. But it was a cardiotoxic diet. There's no question about it. Ham and eggs for breakfast, meatloaf, a light lunch, meatloaf from the night before, and at night you had a steak or pot roast polished off with an ice cream. Now, if you do that to an average human being today, they're dead in 3 years. Let's say you wanted to take Al-Qaeda members, and you say, well, here's your choice. We're either going to keep you in prison indefinitely with no charges for another 10 years, or we can subject you to Michael Savage's childhood diet for 3 months. And if you don't get a heart attack, you're free. You know what I'm saying? It's a choice. Now, the reason I think I'm still alive is twofold. A, I inherited on the FEMA, the maternal side of the genetics, and B was the cod liver oil. Because despite the cardiotoxic diet, She gave me cod liver oil. She made me take drops. It was like in a dropper bottle in orange juice. I hated it. I hated the taste of it. It was so disgusting. To this day, it was like remembrances of disgusting things past. It was like Proust in the negative. Drip, drip, take it, it's good for you. I hated it. Take it or I'll kill you. And the scissors came out, or the big knife from the drawer. The soprano scissors were looked at. Her eyes crossed, and I knew I better take that orange juice with the it was less than getting a good wallop, you know, if I didn't take the juice. It was like the Kool-Aid. I mean, you look back on these things, it's lucky I didn't wind up in Guyana with Jim Jones. You know, I mean, take my Kool-Aid, man. Here's the drops in the Jell-O, you know. What am I talking about? Do some of you, are you able to follow Free Association when I get into the jazz thing of the show, or should I stop it? Would you like two dimensions, one dimension, or seven dimensions? You got to tell me what you want me to do here. On the line is a guy I have not spoken to in 10, 15 years, but he knows that the one-eyed midget from Miami story is 100% true. AC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael.
I don't believe it. It's you. It really is you. I cannot believe it. I heard the other day that you are a listener.
A guy called me. He says, you better call your buddy Mike Savage. He says you should call him. Some bartender called me, the very same guy from 6-7 months ago. Mike, the big question is, do you remember how much money you put in the safe in Florida?
No! How much did I... Was it, wait, I'm going to guess. In those days, $35, my entire life savings.
Bingo!
No. I made... Are you serious? Was it 35 bucks?
We put in the money in the morning. We came back 6 o'clock. He didn't know what you were talking about.
Was it not a midget in a shredded midget suit, like a bellhop?
23rd and Collins, man.
23rd and Collins. So is that South Beach today, Arnie?
Well, you know, South Beach, they want to say, is below 21st Street. So it's not officially South Beach, but it's South Miami.
Okay, but didn't the hotel, did you have bed bugs in your bed?
Of course.
I woke up in the morning, I thought I was hallucinating. There were bed bugs in the hotel. Now, today, I'll bet you that property's worth a pretty penny, no doubt.
But, Mike, you don't remember. You went crazy with the guy. All of a sudden, he immediately found it, or he forgot. He found it.
Wait a minute. Let's slow down. We put the money in, all our money, in the safety deposit box in this flea-bag hotel. We come back. I don't know about no money. I went crazy. Didn't we call for the police?
We threatened to call for the police. The midget eyes started rolling around in his head, the one eye. And all of a sudden, he remembered it was in the back safe.
Oh, I pulled a loud yelling scene in the lobby, right?
Went nuts.
I gave him the command voice and the insanity, and the midget suddenly saw reality. He vaguely remembered the money. Oh, I switched to the other box or something, right? That's right. It reappeared before the police arrived.
Reappeared. All of a sudden, he apologized profusely. What can I say? It was incredible. It was
See, but people think I made up the midget in the Miami hotel story. What else? Now, is it not true, and I won't get too personal, didn't you have an uncle who owned a hotel down there, a rich guy?
Got some memory.
Wait, yes or no? Didn't he own a hotel?
Mickey Hayes,
Oh, my. But wait, but didn't he also have a slight habit of stealing the sugar out of other hotels? I remember he owned a hotel worth millions in those days, even in those days millions, which could be, you know, God knows what today. But he had a habit, the sugar and the butter he took from other hotels.
And the plastic spoons.
That's right. You never knew when you might need them because he could be thrown out of Florida any minute. So without getting into detail, I hear you're happily remarried and everything now. I won't get into details.
Michael, I have been wanting to call you for the longest time. I just never, I don't know what to say, but now I get phone calls, call you
oh,
up.
Oh, no, now the next time you're on the West Coast, it's dinner on me. We're going to have a good laugh. Because as I get older, I realize, I mean, time, tick-tock. You know, you can't invent old friends, my friend AC.
And you know this, you know, are we on the radio now? Because I don't even know, but...
I hope so. If we're not, I'm out of business.
Let me tell you this. There's one thing, I mean, I go over my Michael's, the times we had together. Why can't I get Hakka cuisine here on the East Coast?
Isn't that amazing? From the years you lived in San Francisco?
You took me on Broadway to the Hakka cuisine. There was all...
Oh, yeah, no, it's you cannot get Hakka in New York with that Chinese community? You never heard of a Hakka?
Well, I know is you turned me on to the greatest Chinese food in the world, Hakka.
Well, it's San Francisco has the best Chinese food in the world. There's no question about it. And Hakka cuisine is at the top of the list. It's in the clay pots and the this and that. You know, before you go, I remember one of the best memories of my life in San Francisco was when you lived here after the, before the horrible, and I can't bring it up, let's forget it with the taxi thing, right?
Michael, there's not enough time that we have now. You're on your show.
But I was there for you, wasn't I? Was I not there for you?
You showed up to see that I was still alive. I had the apartment on 17th Avenue. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. My hands were all in casts.
Oh, I'd like to. That is that where? Let's not go into that person. I'm sure he's a board of supervisor today. Do you remember the dinner your former paramour threw in that wonderful apartment? A long Sicilian dinner she had. Remember, she was from Sicily, right? A lovely girl, and she did an Italian meal. Remember I asked for, like, a Godfather meal, and she did it with, like, 20 people at a long table. Remember that meal?
Fabulous.
See that? I remember all the good stuff. It's all simple things, AC, let me tell you.
There's so much, and they asked me what music I wanted to play, and I was all of a sudden I nutted up. You don't play any Latin music for them on the air, do you? They wouldn't understand.
Oh, yes, I do. Once in a while from the private collection. Our old friend Artie sends me CDs I play. Play Para Vivir while AC is on. Let's see if it makes him go.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Arash, you've been waiting. You're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Hi. Here's the basic point I want to make. Islam itself, the religion, the so-called mainstream religion, is about groups, believers or non-believers. It is not about the dignity of man as an individual. So when you have people by the hundreds of millions, you know, billions, who do not believe in the dignity of man or individualism, then naturally they will not recognize individual rights, which is democracy. So if we want to bring democracy there, we have to do a whole lot of banging before that can be set into their thick heads.
I'm not so worried about bringing democracy to them. I'm concerned about them bringing a theocracy to us. Communism didn't believe in individuality either or in individual rights, and Islam and communism has been compared by many intellectuals who have dissected the two isms. Islam is fundamentally a religion that is very much like communism and adherence to the same principle of communism in many, many ways, and people have compared it. And if the leadership doesn't understand that or is too cowardly to say it because they understand they may lose several votes, then we the people are stuck, aren't we?
Yes, we are, sir. You're absolutely right. Now, here's the problem. I'm actually from originally from Afghanistan, sir, but I've grown up in the United States, so I'm an American. My values are all American. That's how I know I'm an American. I do believe in individualism. And as an individual, here's my point. We should specify who the enemy is exactly. Islamism or fundamentalism, they're too vague. They're too academic. If we can identify the enemy as Wahhabism coming out of Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabi Gulf area, Dubai, Qatar, all of these filthy, low-life individuals or, you know, groups or families who are making a lot of money and keeping the rest of the Muslim world ignorant, extremely ignorant, sir. That's the problem. The reason we can't...
You're 100% correct. You're a very educated man. You are a great hope for America. Unfortunately, your voice is falling on dead ears at the White House because the oil lobby is deeply embedded and enmeshed with the Wahhabi Saudi royal family, as you well understand, Arash. That is our problem right there.
So as long as we have Americans who are sellouts, you know, Benedict Arnold taking, you know, petrodollars, I don't see how folks like me, I don't have any money for political activism purposes because no one that does funding will fund what I'm saying. And I'm trying
No, I hear what you're saying. You mean to get your message out. Well, you're getting your message out now. You just had a phenomenal billboard of ideas go across a certain amount of hundreds of thousands of people who listen on an intermittent basis, you know, adding up to a couple of million people a day and, you know, 10 million or so a week. So your position has also been written about, by the way, by intellectuals who have studied Islam. This is well known that it's Wahhabism. This is not a new idea, Arash. The problem is it's hitting a stone wall when it gets to the upper levels of the Bush-Cheney team, but it's no better on the other side. They're all about the same. Do you really think that the Democrat Party is any different?
No, just as worse. Can I tell you the story of one specific Democrat? His name is Jim Moran of Virginia, Democrat. Let me tell you what happened in my neighborhood, sir. The Wahhabis put up a center, not a mosque now, a center there. The good folks of the neighborhood protested. They said, we don't want this here. They were wise enough to know that it would be turned into a terrorist training center. They said, no, 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 we don't want it here. Congressman Jim Moran forced it upon them. He shoved it down their throats and mine. And because of him, the Wahhabi Center in Annandale, Virginia, is now operating full of anti-American hatred. They recently, because of the outrage of a few Muslims, they've had to force two imams to step down, two Saudi-trained imams, because they were putting out too much anti-American garbage. But so what? They'll just get another and another and another. The point is, why can't we close it down?
Well, there are two answers to the question. One is it may have been a pointedly wise thing to leave it open, sort of as a honey trap for flies. You know, maybe the FBI wanted it open to attract the would-be suicide bombers. You know what I'm saying, Arash?
Yes, but in my neighborhood, sir.
So you're saying you're a mainstream, moderate practitioner of the religion of Islam, correct?
No, sir. I don't practice. I don't believe in religion.
Okay, you just don't want it in your neighborhood because you say it's too extreme and it teaches hatred and murder.
Not only that, but it's dangerous. What if these nutcases hurt me accidentally on their way to hurting someone who's whiter, you know?
You mean if they're wiring up some kind of device and it goes off?
Right, or devices, many, you know? And forget devices. These people are dangerous with their bare hands, believe it or not.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.